welcome to the Messiantics Podcast, a podcast about all things Messianic Judaism. Each episode, we will be sharing our opinions as we tackle some of the biggest issues in Messianic Judaism. Now, here's your hosts, Rabbis Eric, David, Jonathan, and Toby.
Shalom. I'm here today, and we're glad that you tuned in. This is Rabbi Eric. I'm joined with Rabbi Jonathan, Rabbi David, and Rabbi Toby. And we just returned recently from the Rabbis Conference in Orlando. And while we were there, we had great fellowship with good friends, hung out with people. But we also realized two things. One, that there is a growing group, not as large as I'd like to see yet, but a growing group of young leaders who are feeling called to enter into Messianic ministry. But the other side of the coin is that there's a large group of senior leaders who are actually senior. Now, they're getting older. And so we were talking about the issue of what happens next. Thankfully, our congregations have a plan in motion for what happens. God forbid one of our senior leaders go. We have assistant rabbis in place. We have people that are there, but there's a lot of congregations that do not have a succession plan. Matter of fact, it appears that some of them, their only plan for succession is the rapture. You know, the rapture happens, they don't need to have somebody come in and take their place, but up until then, they don't really have that. But we don't want to get sidetracked too much into the what happens next plan as the what happens if we don't have a what's happening next plan.
Right.
In other words, if you don't have somebody in place to fill in the gap, it leaves this huge vacuum within the community. And we've seen this happen as not only with senior leaders, but with worship leaders or others who, for various reasons, someone gets sick and can't be there, someone dies and can't be there, someone's job transfers them, and suddenly they're having to leave, and they've held a key position in the congregation. And there hasn't been a succession plan in place for these positions, these roles. And it causes not only a vacuum, which brings in both, you know, the other day an airliner was flying and the door went off, you know, just a big hole in the plane. And it, when that happens, it sucks everything toward the hole.
Right.
And in a community, in a congregation, when a vacuum is caused, it sucks everything, both good and bad, toward the hole. And if we're not careful, we'll just grab the closest thing to us and throw it in that place and hope that it works out.
Right.
So we're going to have a nuanced talk more about that in the case. And again, this is Messiantics. We're talking about the antics or the things that make us different, unique, and both good and bad within our movement. So that's what we kind of want to talk about today.
So I want to dive in this and bring up the there's this old adage that I've heard forever, especially from old military guys, you know, that to fail to plan is to plan to fail. And what ends up happening in a lot of these situations is, and here's the reality about it. Messianic congregations, for the most part, I mean, you've got your outliers like you do sometimes in the church world and whatever, but for the most part, Messianic congregations are very adamant about being good stewards, right? We're cautious to steward the resources that come in. We're cautious to steward the building. We're cautious to steward the relationships and so on. But the reality is stewardship goes beyond that, right? Rabbi Toby and I were talking about this on the way here. God gives us a congregation. He gives us a leadership team. He gives us people in the seats. He gives us people serving in various avenues of ministry in the congregation. And it's our responsibility to steward them. But that doesn't just go from the day-to-day operation. That goes into, well, what happens if, right? I had a conversation with a Messianic leader a few years ago. The senior rabbi or the only rabbi in their congregation almost died a few years ago. And I was having a conversation with a few leaders about this very issue. Like, you know, why are there no transition succession plans? What can we do to better facilitate, like, modeling this for people and giving somebody a baseline they can work with to develop this and what have you? And this other leader pops in and goes, oh, at our congregation, we've got a phenomenal transition plan or succession. I think he said succession plan. We've got a phenomenal succession plan. I was like, oh, well, I'd really like to hear that because your rabbi almost died, you know, this last year. I'd really like to hear what your succession plan is. And I had my doubts that there was something that could be called a succession plan, but I was willing to hear it out because if there is, like, there's a baseline, let's start working with it, right? And he turns to me and he goes, look, you're going to love it. It's great. I said, oh, this is going to be bad. He goes, if something were to happen to our rabbi, our elders would take over the congregation for a few months, and we would run it in the day-to-day and teach and all that, and then we would develop a search committee to find a new rabbi and then bring them in and so on and so forth. I'm like, I said, dude, do you hear yourself talking? He's like, huh? So that's not a succession plan. That's not a transition plan. That's a contingency plan.
Right.
That's if the crap hits the fan, what do we do to right the ship now? Yeah, that's
both rabbis went to Messiah conference. The plane went down.
Exactly.
They both died.
That's a contingency plan. And one of the issues Rabbi Toby brought up Moses and Joshua on the way here. And, you know, Joshua served for 40 years under Moses. He was in the tent when Moses would go in to encounter the presence of God in the tent of meetings. Joshua would go in with him. Moses would come out to do whatever it is he needed to do, and Joshua stayed in place there. And the community witnessed the trust, the development, the relationship, the mentorship that Moses was feeding into and sowing into Joshua. So when the time came 40 years later for Joshua to take over and there to be a succession from Moses to Joshua, the congregation wasn't like shocked when this happened. They weren't trying to figure out, well, how do we relate to this guy? How do we plug in? This is a whole new system. What are we going to do now? They're going to change everything up, because they knew what they were getting. They knew what to expect. They already had that relationship. And so if we're operating off of contingency plans, number one, we're not being good stewards of what God has placed in our care. Number two, we're setting our communities up for failure, because I joked with Rabbi Toby on the way here, because I'm an avid motorcyclist. I put 10 to 15,000 miles a year on a motorcycle. I love being on two wheels. That's my preferred method of transportation. But with that also comes the reality that at any given moment, something could go horribly wrong, and that could be my last motorcycle ride ever and potentially my last breath ever. And it's a horrible, dark thing to think of. But as a motorcyclist, that's something you just have to come to terms with. This could be it. Every ride I get on, this could be it. And so I was joking with Rabbi Tobes, like, you know, we don't necessarily have something in writing, but I can tell you if something were to happen, if I take my bike out tomorrow, which it's like 1,000% chance of thunderstorms tomorrow, so that's probably not going to happen. But if I take my bike out tomorrow and I go down and that's the end of it for me, we have somebody that our congregation's already got a relationship with, that they already trust, that they're already comfortable with. You would be taking the congregation over and running from there. And you know the systems and the way we do things. You have ideas of what you can do from there and build upon it and whatever. But that's our succession plan, is we have somebody there. And a lot of these guys, they don't have anybody. They've never put the time and effort into raising up a Joshua, into raising up somebody.
And in doing so, not only raising someone, because there are people that I know that have people that they hope will take over.
Right.
But
have they ever had the conversation?
Have the conversation and do it. Now, there's some really good examples. For instance, Alan Levine and Jude Carosello. They had a transition where they didn't wait until Alan was dead or dying or too old to move or any of those things, but they had a transition in place where Alan showed his trust in Jude. Didn't just, you know, sometimes we have people that we use in our congregations, I guess we include ourselves in this also sometimes, but where we use them, but we don't put them in a way where people know we have absolute trust in who they are, that we've given them the hold of the baton to follow, to do. When somebody asks me about something Rabbi Jonathan does, I say, go ask Rabbi Jonathan. I don't, because I trust him. So when he gives messages, I don't get his messages, critique them, hand them back to them, and tell him what to say. You know, we talk about, I have instilled as time went on. Now, he's been here for 3 years. The first time he preached, I did say, okay, what are you going to talk about? Let's talk about this and so on. But after 3 years of him being there, there's no doubt when he gets up there, and it's no longer, it used to be that when I wasn't there, a good portion of the congregation wouldn't show up. If they got there and saw I wasn't there, they would go back to their cars and leave. That's no longer the case. As a matter of fact, the last time I was out of town. Rabbi Jonathan was there, and we had a huge crowd. We had lots of visitors. We had, and it was like it was such a happy moment for me to know that he has become, in the eyes of the congregation, a Joshua, and not some outsider who might, or that they don't trust, or they don't know. They have a relationship with him. They trust his prayer life. They trust his walk. They've heard him teach. They know where he comes from. All of those things. And it's so important, because it takes away the opportunity for the vacuum. It takes away for that panic that people have should something happen. And the truth is that unfortunately, in many of our cases in the Messianic movement, the transition concept is when I die or I get too sick to do this.
Yeah.
But the reality is that long before, and I just was talking to a Rebbetzin, one of my friend's wives, we were having a conversation about this, and she said she'd been talking with other Rebbetzin her age about how many of them really want their husbands to retire. Mm-hmm. Like, their husbands are old enough now, they should be retiring, they should be spending their sunset years with their wife, they should be visiting their grandchildren, things like what Rabbi Rosenberg has done in New York, where he's retired from it, and he's living in Chicago now with his son, and he's able to spend time with his grandchildren and do those things that you do. You know, biblically, you trained until you were 30. From 30 to 50, you served primarily. From 50 till whenever you died, you trained the next generation, helped, encouraged, consulted. And we've not done that in our movement, and to the detriment of both the young people coming up and our spouses in the process.
Yeah.
And so we need to change the way we think about these things. And I know a number of IMCS leaders and union leaders, UMJC leaders, who have nobody in their congregation that's in a place to follow along, to take. And they have spouses that would like to spend
their
twilight years together, not getting out of ministry, but getting out of that day-to-day responsibility where you're carrying the burden of the whole community on your shoulders, where you can pass it to the next generation and allow them to go. And it does a disservice to our wives, our family, our grandchildren. It does a disservice to our congregation. It does a disservice to the young people coming up that have a calling but have no outlet for their calling. And all of these things are so important, and it diminishes the effectiveness of our ministry, and it locks us into a place where we're limited in what we can do. If you have an assistant rabbi that's on your staff, somebody that you're with, you have the ability to grow in a way that you don't have if you're by yourself. You have ability to share responsibility, you have more coverage for the people in your community, to pray for them, to help them, to minister to them. All of those things are vital to what's going on. And I can tell you, as the oldest one in this room, you know, I'm in my 60s now. I know that realistically I've got 20 years left, and I'd like to spend that 20 years doing ministry, but also spending time with my wife, traveling, visiting, encouraging other leaders, maybe sharing the wisdom that God's given me over the years with other people to help them, spending time with my grandchildren.
Book tour.
All of the things. But there's no way I could do that if I didn't have Jonathan. And the truth is, we're looking for others to work alongside Jonathan.
Yeah.
Right. I think for me, and I think we spent the last like 10 minutes or so really, I think, developing a good foundation for what the problem is.
Right.
So let's look at, I think, the two things that can happen. If you don't do this, if you don't prepare, if you don't train up, if you're a Moses and you don't have your Joshua, what's two things that's going to happen? Well, first off, I think let me just look at history. I'm not comparing the kingdom of God to these historic, I'm saying this is human nature. This is what happens. When Alexander the Great took over massive swaths of the known world, when he died, suddenly What happened to his massive swaths that he took over?
Split.
It split into four little parts between his four generals. That's just one example. So if something happens to you and there's no plan, if you're a senior leader and something happens to you and there's no plan and you've not been showing the congregation that you have faith and trust in another leader or in a younger leader, or what I'm saying is, if every time someone else speaks at the Bema, your congregation, and you aren't there, you have a problem. And you have a risk of your congregation breaking apart, folding. You're going to lose people. You will. You might have a core people that stick around, but you're going to lose a lot of those people that are showing up to your event every week,
right,
which is pretty much what you've made it. You've hinged the entire ministry around your personality.
Right.
That's what you've done. You've not really, your ministry that God has given you has become a cult of personality.
Right.
It's about your personality. That's the first problem, and we can go through both. The second problem, which Rabbi Eric touched on a little bit, is anytime someone leaves, and it is absolutely in Scripture, anytime a leader dies or leaves, it creates a vacuum and it attracts the wrong types of people. And Rabbi Eric, before we hit record, said, yeah, it's like the shark circling. Or it's like if you're in the desert and the vultures are circling you.
Yeah.
Does it happen? Well, let's see. When King David died, even he spent time telling all the congregation of Israel, like, Solomon, my son. And David put work into preparing everything for his son to ascend the throne. But even with all of that, when David died, Adonijah showed up and tried to usurp Solomon. So you don't think that, you better believe that happens in the kingdom of God. So you have to be prepared. So even if you do have a successor, but if you don't, what I'm saying is when that person leaves, whether they quit or they die or they retire, here come, how are you going to know the difference between the sharks and the people who are there out of the goodness of their heart? You should have a plan.
Right. And your elders, your leadership team, even if you don't have somebody at your congregation that is the man that's going to take your place, your elders should have an outline, a plan for what to do. God forbid something happens, and go. And we have to understand. You know, I heard a young woman say one time in a class that that too many women settle instead of waiting for Mr. Right, they settle for Mr. Right Now.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, many congregations, if they don't have a plan of what to do, and even if they're, like I said, if there isn't somebody in the congregation, where do we find one? How do we acquire one? How do
right.
how do we advertise for it? What organizations are there
yeah.
we can reach out to so that you don't just stick whoever's in there? Because you can do a great deal of damage by letting mm-hmm. Mr. Right Now
right.
Or saying, well,
if something happens to me or whatever, well, we're going to have our elders come together. And I'm like, uh-huh. And then you're gone. And what if your elders start fighting? And then what if your elders start taking people with them? And then, well, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And then you got two congregations or three congregations or no congregation because it all imploded.
Right. And it may have to be said, if you have five elders, say, but none of them is gifted to be a shepherd or a rabbi,
right.
That has to be said.
Yeah.
That, okay, you guys, if something happens to me, don't fight amongst yourselves for who's going to be the rabbi, because none of you are called to do that. You guys need to work together to find somebody who is called. You guys can hold things together. You can teach. You know, an elder has to be able to teach, has to be able to do. But it has to be said. You can't just, because if you have five men and all five of them are like, what do we do now?
Mm-hmm.
And then they all feel like, well, I have a responsibility to step up even if I'm not called.
Right.
And then they start fighting amongst themselves about who's going to be. You have a Rehoboam, Jeroboam situation.
Yeah, that's what.
Of
yeah.
who's going to be in charge now that dad's gone. And, you know, it becomes a problem. But these vacuum things, and again, it's not just the succession plan, it's the understanding the vacuum and how to deal with that in not just congregationally, but we deal with this with Shabbat school leaders.
Yeah.
We deal with this with worship team
leaders.
Yeah,
it doesn't just apply to senior leaders.
We have a prison ministry that was very active, and our prison ministry leader had to step down because of family obligations. His parents got sick and so on. We didn't just throw somebody in. I would rather not have somebody in that place than have the wrong person in there until God brings the right person in there.
Yeah.
I would rather use canned music for my worship than have the wrong person in as my worship leader.
Right.
Yeah. It's just really important.
And what's the and everybody's like, well, what does he mean by the sharks circling? What does he mean by the vacuum? What's the threat? What's the problem? Because you perhaps you've never met these people, and if you're listening, I think you probably have. It's people with a voracious desire to have authority and to be in control,
to be seen.
Right. And if, like I said, I'll give you just a brief story of when I was at a congregation and the worship leader left. This guy had been the worship leader for a while. The senior rabbi at the time had named me worship leader. It was kind of a freak thing, but I was named the worship leader. And let me tell you the conversations I had in the weeks after, all with musicians that suddenly just came out of the woodwork. Well, what's going on? Hey, what's going on? What's happening with the worship team? What's going on? What's going on? I'm like... And I just remember thinking, I'll tell you why they're talking to me, because the worship leader left. Yeah. It's the vacuum. One guy had not come in. Oh, we hadn't seen him in forever. And he showed up. Hey, what's going on, man? What's happening? I'm like, I'm telling you, man, there's people that will, they're opportunists. They will. And if you don't believe that, five chapters into Acts, you had Ananias and Sapphira. You had these types of people. Yeah. Five chapters into Acts after the new Messianic community, after Yeshua left, and here they come. Yeah. So you have to know. You have to watch out.
Or the
Simon the sorcerer.
Right.
You know, I don't want to live for God. I just want the power.
Yeah.
How can I buy that?
Right.
And the vacuum that you guys are talking about, that all goes back to what I said at the beginning, right? You fail to plan, you're planning to fail.
Yep.
We are charged to be stewards of our congregation. You know, the statement you just made, Rabbi Eric, about I would rather have nobody leading a ministry and not have that ministry active than have the wrong person. And we've had that conversation 1,000 times in our congregation because I'm very intentional in that same attitude. We just had it in a membership interview two weeks ago. I always ask people in our membership interview, hey, where do you see yourself serving in the congregation? What area of ministry do you see being the best fit for you, right? Not because that's necessarily where we're going to put you, but before we make thoughts on where we would like to see you work, I want to see where your heart is and what God's already speaking to you on. And they go, you know, honestly, just wherever God wants to use me. And I was like, no, that's not how this game is played here. We're very intentional about we will not put somebody in a position just to fill a position. I don't want holes filled. I want the right people in the right place at the right time. our Shabbat school coordinator approached us a couple of weeks ago and said, hey, I'm not planning on going anywhere anytime soon. I'm not planning on stepping away, but I think it's time that we start to develop a understudy, a number two.
That's great.
For Shabbat school to start to so that when the time comes, if something happens to me, if God calls me on elsewhere or whatever, that there's a plan in place or something there. And so our thing is we don't want to put somebody, we did do canned music. Brett Om did too. We did canned music for a very long time. I had gotten really good at making lyric videos, to have up on the screens, so that it was less distracting. There wasn't somebody having to run something. Everybody could worship until we had worship leaders, until we had things in place. We did not have Shabbat school for years until we have the right people in place for that. And so on. And there are probably 100 other ministry outlets that we could do at CMC that we aren't going to do until the right people are in place.
Yeah, and it's important for people to realize that it's okay not to have something. You know, we kind of think that, okay, we have a men's ministry, so if the leader of that steps down or moves or whatever, we have to get someone in there because we have to have this men's ministry. Right. No, you don't.
We're going through that with our own youth group.
Right.
We had youth leaders transition out. Rabbi David, and this is before we got there, but he didn't just stick to other people in that position.
Right.
Between me and Rabbi David and our wives, we are caretaking the youth ministry until, God brings
I would
that
say
up.
I would say that youth ministry is probably one of the only avenues in congregational life that I don't think the not doing it because we don't have somebody to lead it is an option, particularly because of the fact that, and I'll speak specifically to the Messianic movement. As a whole, our movement has not been good at actually mentoring and growing young people for retention purposes, that for their walk with, not just for numbers in our seats, but for their walk with the Lord, for their connectivity to Messianic Judaism and so on. We have not been good at, my entire generation that I grew up with in the YMJ basically doesn't exist anymore in the MJ or in the Messianic Jewish movement. Like, they've all gone off. Either they walked away from the Lord
or went to church,
or they went to churches or whatever, but they're not in the movement anymore.
Yeah, and a number of them went to Israel.
Yeah. But, and so youth groups are the one area that if, and don't get me wrong, like, youth ministry is not, like, that's not the thing my hand's going up for.
Right.
Like, I'm not volunteering for that one in a hurry. But as the rabbis of the congregation, we felt it necessary, just because we didn't have youth leaders anymore. They stepped away from that role. And it wasn't like they didn't step away because they wanted to, just some stuff that went on, and it was clear that it wasn't going to work. So we had to transition that. And we did not feel it was fair to the youth to say, well, we don't have anybody, so you're, you know, out of luck. We're just going to let you roll on your own. We felt it more important that we invest that time and energy and sow into them and give them a place and show them that love and compassion until God provides new youth leaders.
But what I was saying, and I agree with you, but what I was trying to say is there, for instance, if, in your case with your youth, while you continued having events and things for your youth, you didn't have to do everything the previous leaders did.
Correct.
You just
continued. And I was agreeing with you. We didn't just find two warm bodies.
Right, right. So, you know, when it comes to certain things, like, you're going to have worship. You may not have a worship leader, but you're going to have worship. So you transition to do something to keep that place until such a time as
Well, why this is so important is because some years ago, the first rabbi I served under gave me some really important advice when I went to him about adding a new member to the worship team. And he goes, have you prayed about it? And I said, yeah, I've prayed about it. I really feel like the Lord has confirmed it. And he goes, okay. He goes, the reason why I'm saying this is because putting them up there is easy, but taking them off, he goes, you have to rip them off.
Right. One of the most important messages Rabbi Judah Hungerman ever taught at a rabbi's conference is, it's easier to appoint than to disappoint.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Well, because unless they do something egregious, like, I mean, egregious where it's just obvious, if they behave badly or something, what I'm saying is you can get a person up there with the wrong spirit, and it can still be hard to take them off the stage, whether it's eldership, on the worship team. I had a situation as a worship leader with a particular person. Do you know how long it took me to deal with this problem personality before they were gone? 4 years, man. Because why? Because we're so nice? No, because look, you can't just do that. You can't appoint somebody and then operate in grace and mercy with them and then rip them off in 2 weeks, even if you're like, oh God, I made a bad decision. So you have to steward your ministry with care. And if you're not preparing the congregation for the future, what you're communicating is, it's about me and what I've done and what I'm doing, and not about the fact that God has always been, I think, what he loved about the children of Israel. And how many times does it say, when your children ask you, when your children ask you, when your children ask you, you are to say, God is about, if you love me, you'll share me, not keep these things.
And you said something, Rabbi Toby, earlier that really hit something really strong, and I don't know if it was picked up enough, but when we have people, like I have people that I bring in to speak at our congregation regularly, we quite often have people there that speak from other ministries. I have Rabbi Jonathan speak even when I'm in the service. It's not, so the point I'm trying to make is that there are times we put people in places, there's times we take them out of places, regardless, and it doesn't mean that there's right or wrong going on.
Right.
In other words, you can use somebody to teach because it's a season for them to teach, and then them not teach because it's no longer that season.
Right.
And if you don't teach your congregation that transition happens outside of sin, outside of immorality. So if you bring someone into the worship team for a period of time, and then they feel like we had one of our worship leaders, one of our worship team members who came up to me and he said, "Hey, Rabbi, I'm not in sin or anything, but I just need to take some time to right. work on myself to pray. I want to strengthen myself. I don't feel like I've been praying, seeking, doing as much as I should to be a worship leader. That there's a higher level of responsibility spiritually to be up here." And now he wasn't in sin. He wasn't doing anything wrong. He just felt like, and if we don't deal with our congregations to where when that person steps down and they see him sitting in the congregation that they assume there's sin in his life or something right. going on, we've also did a disservice to our, and that opens that whole vacuum of yeah. things from a whole different thing, because then the instead of it being bodies coming in to fill the void, gossip, innuendo, rumors, and things fill those voids.
I think if the Apostle Paul were to look at the way some of these senior leaders are behaving, I think he'd say, "Are you nuts?" He goes, do you know? I mean, because when you read the scriptures in Paul's epistles, he was so eager to be a channel for the authority of the Holy Spirit and empower men like Titus and Timothy and these people, you know. And I think I think Paul was never one to say. I mean, he did so much of his ministry from prison, and he's telling Timothy, like, "Timothy, just keep going, man, keep going." You know,
and one of the things I love about Paul, I mean, when we talk about, for instance, Mark,
yeah,
you know, Paul raises him up and then sets him down and then raises him back up again.
Oh, yeah.
And there it's not a one and done. It's not like, okay, right. you're out of here. There's no opportunity. These voids that we're talking about, these vacuums happen for good reasons. We had two of our worship leaders had babies.
Yeah.
You know, they were the leaders of the worship team, and they had a baby, and suddenly it wasn't a bad thing. There wasn't a sin. It wasn't a horror. Yeah. It wasn't somebody died. Something wonderful happened, and we had a void that came in, and you have to have plans for these things. So it's when we're talking about these things, we're not just talking about bad things,
no.
but just life that brings changes, and we need to prepare our congregation for change dynamically, and we need to remember what Jethro told Moses. Are you crazy trying to do everything on your own?
Yeah.
Are you leading worship, doing the opening, doing all the stuff, leading the liturgy, reading the Torah, and giving the message, and doing the, you know, and your wife is doing the books,
right.
the records, the Shabbat school, the worship team, the...
And let's not even, like, that's a whole other day's conversation on what the expectation on the rabbi's wives are, which is just entirely unfair and unrealistic. And their children.
I think that when I think of Paul being the way he was, just incredibly humble with the gift that had been given him. But you know, all the while he's raising up Timothy and Titus and guys like this, young men and young women, he also would say out of the other side of his mouth, "By the way, I have no business being called an apostle." And I think some of that attitude's been lost. I mean, because. I feel like the attitude is not
well, and largely it's a cultural thing. Like that's, you know, the
understanding it was never coming to him.
Right. Well, and there's, I hate to say it this way, but you kind of have to look at when the resurgence of the Messianic movement was, mm-hmm. which was kind of at the mid-range or even the height of when pop culture evangelicalism
right.
kind of came about, where you really, like, before the 60s and 70s,
yeah.
your pastor was a local guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was the local pastor.
He sold tomatoes and stuff during the week to pay
right.
for
right.
the power bill at
your
the church.
If you were Catholic, your priest, he was the priest of the right. local parish. Like, he wasn't, like, famous on YouTube or Instagram or Vine or TikTok or whatever. But, like, 60s and 70s opened up TV pastors, radio pastors. The sort suddenly now you could be up in front and
with that comes,
and be known. Mm-hmm. And people like that feeling. And I think that spirit has largely it prevents people from being able to be humble in a lot of these cases.
Yeah, and I don't think that doesn't mean that those people, because they want the attention, are bad. What I would say, if someone's, when I see a person who likes attention and wants to be famous or wants to be known, I think, well, that's just human condition. That's what your flesh wants.
Right.
That's normal. We all have
that.
What
I'm saying is it prevents, that's what prevents the, you know, we've joked about it before on here that, you know, we've heard people say, like, you know, I'll turn over my congregation.
Yes.
You can pry it from my cold, dead hands to the next generation, yeah. the next up.
No, I was, I was totally agreeing with you. I was just saying that I think that it's totally normal to combat that. I think we don't warn our young leaders enough of the right. dangers of success. We want them to be successful, but we don't understand that, you know, there is a risk that comes with visible success.
Sure.
Right. I think that, you know, to me, and having Rabbi Jonathan in place where he is has given me something that really is a blessing. And that's, I'm so thankful and grateful that we have hundreds of people that come to our synagogue right. every week to hear me teach. But I'm also thankful now that if I'm not there, they're still going to come.
Yeah, that's
that those priceless. People are coming because there's right. a culture of worship, a culture of being part of a community, a culture, and it's not about me. If and I'm going on vacation in a couple of weeks, and when I do, everybody's going to come because it's not. Although people come because of the leader, and that's just, as you said, human nature.
Some of that's just going to happen.
It's going to happen, but they come. Now they're coming not just because of me, and if God forbid something happened to me next week, our congregation would continue. There'd be sadness, but they would continue going yeah. on right. without a speed bump, without falling apart, without. And it has to be that way, not just with the congregation leader, but the worship leader, the Shabbat school leader, the Oneg director, everybody in the congregation. The culture of the congregation has to be such that people are doing it for God,
right?
And that the continuum of the congregation should continue. And I was talking to somebody last week, and I said that we had a visitor come, and he said, man, it's amazing that you have all these people that stay here for hours after your service is over with and just want to hang out. And I said, that's because our culture is that we're building a community, and out of a community, a congregation was birthed.
Yeah.
Rather than the other way around. And if you're about the congregation, about the people in the pews, about having somebody there, about performing, about having a message that is better than every other message everywhere.
You'll just have a nice service.
You're going to have a nice service and go on. And then if something happens, there will be that vacuum.
Oh, yeah.
But if you build a culture of community where people just want to be with each other, regardless of who's going to be speaking or who's leading the worship or who's doing the liturgy that particular week or whatever, then it changes everything. And I think that's the culture that we're trying to talk about, is a culture that doesn't allow a vacuum to be formed. Mm-hmm. Something that is purposely set in motion with the understanding that people change all the time, that there's going to be rotation, there's going to be a different person doing things, and that it's a regular norm.
Right.
Matter of fact, someone asked me the other day if I was taking the month off because Rabbi Jonathan taught, and then we had Rabbi Kokev Gadamu teach, and this week Rabbi Arroyo is going to be here, and then
and that's it. January's over,
right? And January's over, but I didn't take a month off. I've been here the whole time.
Yeah,
it's just that I don't have to be in the Bima in order for me to feel like I'm leading the congregation mm-hmm. and being a shepherd, and my people don't need me to be in the Bima in order for them to feel like they're part of the congregation and I'm the rabbi.
Right. And I can say, just because I'm present for a lot of stuff, that there's been a lot of shepherding this month that's not like teaching related.
Right.
A lot of stuff going on this particular month is like, oh, wow, we're dealing with a lot.
Well, yeah, that was what impressed me, I think, that I wasn't used to when I came here and Rabbi David started to have me speak because it was a transition. Like if you could put it on a graph, it slowly went up. And I think right. that was very purposeful and meaningful. And, but I just remember, being at the Bema and speaking, and at the back there's David, and he's actually still doing stuff
right.
Behind the scenes. But I'm like, man, that's real humility too. Like I was like, wow, he's here.
Right.
And he's allowing me to come up here and giving me this opportunity. And right. that is a level of humility that the congregation is witnessing him exercise.
Right.
And it says, and David knows that that says less about him and more about God, because what it's saying is that David's saying, listen, it's the same spirit, it's the same power, it's the same God, it's the same calling.
Right.
So it was very humbling for me to see him back there, because I'm going to be honest with you, in my years leading up to coming to CMC, I was not used to that. I was used to, I'm going out of town, we'll throw a warm body up there. It's only for a week.
Yeah.
Right. And I'll tell you this, that one of the biggest blessings of having this type of culture where I don't have to be up on the Bema is I get to sit with my wife during service. You know, for
something
for
you didn't get to do for years.
Yeah, for years, I didn't get to sit with my wife during service. I didn't get to be with her and worship standing next to her and be part of that. So it's a cultural shift that is allowed. But if in the same way that at our congregation, and same thing with CMC, we plan months in advance for things, we're not, it's not like every week we're sitting there wondering, what are we going to do this Shabbat? What are we going to do next Shabbat? What are we doing this? We're 6 months out planning events, planning things happening. The same way we are culturally with leadership, with people doing things, with stuff. It isn't, we're not reacting to things. We're not reactive. We're proactive. We're putting people in place, doing things. And we're watching and we're saying, okay, let's raise this person up a little bit and see where they are. Okay, maybe they aren't ready for that. Let's bring it down a little bit so we don't put them in place and then hurt them or break their spirit.
Or hurt others in the process. So
I wanted to ask about, or not ask, but kind of present it, because we're not just complaining for the last, I guess, you know, I know we're kind of getting into the downhill part of the episode, but the application part, because somebody might be listening saying, well, how would we even begin to do that? What does that look like? Oh, yeah, is that what you were going into?
When you're done,
No. Well, because what I was telling you, for me and David, I guess the thing that came to my mind was literally it was like he was a pilot. And he came in and said, okay, sit next to me. And literally that's how it is to this very day when I'm talking. Yeah. It's like I'm sitting next to him and he's flying. And then but I have stuff to do.
Right.
But sometimes he'll say, hey, I'm going to kick the stick, you know, the control stick over to you.
Yeah.
And then he'll give it to me and then I'm doing it. And I've made mistakes and I've clipped stuff. And I've almost gotten a spin a couple times,
broken the landing gear.
But that's because it was so gradual. And then David will say, "Okay, you know what? Here's what you know." And all the while we're flying, I'm like, "Hey, how do you deal with this? How do you deal with that? What happens if the plane does this? You know?"
And one of the things that Rabbi David did with you that I had never really thought of that we're implementing in, and so I like to learn from other people to overcome things I didn't do right or may not have done, is when he brought you in to be the assistant rabbi, I think you spent a month or more just being a congregant.
I think it was 3 months.
Yeah, it was three months.
3 months just being a congregant. Yeah. In other words, he allowed you to build a relationship with people in a congregational community level before you started having to be the leader and talking. So it allowed relationship to build. It allowed that foundation to be built. And it was something that I said, well, that was brilliant. Now, I didn't do that with Jonathan. I wish I had in some ways to do that. But it was something that I said, this is powerful. And again, it allowed community to build, so no vacuum was formed. There wasn't who is this guy coming from wherever that's suddenly my boss?
Yeah. And I know that, and I'm using the airplane, but I'm thinking about like the passengers are like the congregation and they're sitting there and they're like, they know David can fly the plane, but they also know that, well, hey, Toby just flew it a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And David has been gradually kind of, you know, switching over to that. So the congregation knows, okay, well, he can fly the plane too.
Yeah.
And we know that David flies the plane most of the time, and that's how it should be. But I just think that's what's been powerful about it is that gradual confidence that he, while he's sitting there, the congregation's watching it too. And I think has been
the good. Or at least they can still see that he wears the captain's bars on his jacket.
Unfortunately, in many congregations, the way the congregation meets their next leader is at the funeral of the previous leader.
Cool. Yeah. And I do want to throw out one other thing too with the, you know, we gave that 3 month window for them to familiarize themselves with the congregation, build a relationship with the congregation.
Right.
But with that, like he was learning the details of what we do and how we do on the background and so on. But in that time where we were very intentional for these 3 months, you have zero responsibilities. You're here to plant yourself in the congregation. We started paying him then. Right. We didn't wait until the 3 months was up to start paying him and right. like see if this is going to pay. Like that was, we started paying them his salary then, even though he wasn't actively responsible for anything. That still counted in his kind of time of service and so on in the congregation.
Yeah. You were going to say, yeah.
Yeah, well I was, we're talking about practical implementation of this. One of the things that we're doing, and we had started talking about last year, was that, you know, we're looking to kind of develop a circle of teachers. We want to have more than just Rabbi Eric and myself. And so people who are qualified, because, you know, like it or not, we'd like the people who are qualified, not just so we can, use them and ask them to do things, but so that, you know, God willing, if there's a congregation elsewhere that needs a leader, like there's a pool. You know, but people can be like, oh, Bredam's got a pool of four other people that aren't actively employed by the synagogue that are qualified to teach.
Right.
And to,
are you going to set up a transfer portal next?
Yeah. But, so, you know, one of the things that we started, we got a couple people in mind that we're, a few people in mind that we're kind of, you know, talking to and teaching and, asking to, hey, prepare teaching for Tuesday nights. You know, which is when we do our, typically it's a thematic study or a book of the Bible study. And we have them come in and teach. And one of the things that we did was we put out a tzedakah box and said, you don't have to, but if you would like to just show your appreciation for these people who are not employed by the synagogue, but took time to pray, to study, to read, and to prepare a teaching, you know, please feel free to give just to show gratitude, because we believe in allowing the ox to, you know, eat as it treads out the grain. And so, you know, allowing, if you're going to raise people up or even think about it, they need to, like, you were paid before you even were like actively, you know, serving in the role that you were brought to be there for. They need to be shown that there is a future for them in that there is a, like, you are appreciated in this potential place that you exist in. So that way, and because, you know, if it doesn't work out, like for example, like obviously they may never be employed full time here at Bredam, but elsewhere they'll have already received a taste of what that feels like to be appreciated, to know, and then they can take that elsewhere and go, here's how I need to be treated, here's how my family needs to be treated, to be a teacher. And if you're not planning for that, and that's a really easy thing to do, set out a tzedakah box. You got a couple people you think, you know, God's calling for. Up to teach it, maybe even to be in leadership, begin giving them opportunities to teach and to even be, you know, appreciated for it fiscally.
And be present for it.
And be present for it. Don't just be like,
not when you're,
all right, man, here you go. It's all yours.
Yeah.
And leave. Yeah. No, be present for it. And then there's, you know, and I would say if you can, if your synagogue has the money, even allow them to take some of the classes in the IMCS Yeshiva to pursue ordination as a teacher. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, because that takes a couple years. You know, I mean, you can do it quicker than a couple years. But if they're doing it kind of, you know, at a working adult's pace, you know, allow them to fully enter into that role. And if they do, and if they get, you know, licensed and ordained, and then you've brought up now a teacher and you have someone available to you or someone else.
So one thing I want to throw into this conversation, especially if you're a congregational leader or a ministry leader and are listening to this episode and going, man, I want to start implementing some of this in our community and developing towards building up a longevity for our congregation and so on. One of the biggest pieces of advice that I can give that I think would be a tremendous resource would be to utilize Strength Finders. Go buy the book StrengthsFinder 2.0. Read through it. There's a quiz that comes with it that will kind of tell you what your top five strengths are. You can see how you can best implement in your role in that. But put your team through StrengthsFinders, and there are some free online quizzes that are The same thing as StrengthsFinder is just it's not that brand that are available, but utilize these resources because one of the big, and by the way, StrengthsFinder is, it's used in the business world, but it actually was originally developed by believers for ministry. It just happened to also work really well in the business world as well. But the whole goal to it is you find out what your strengths are, and in turn, you find out what your weaknesses are. And you're going to be the best you can be in your role by operating within your strengths and building a team around you that makes up for your weaknesses. And so, for instance, and I'll just use my wife and myself as an example. I have, like, on my strengths finders, empathy is one of the strengths, and it is not in my list. Like, I'm almost certain they left it off altogether. But my wife is super empathetic, and it's actually empathy is her top strength. And so we're able to balance each other in really unique ways because of, and the same Rabbi Toby and Rabbitson Brook, their strengths finders were, some things overlap with ours, but there are others that, like, I have certain strengths that Rabbi Toby doesn't have, and he has strengths that I don't have, and we're able to support each other and bolster each other because we're making up for each other's weaknesses. And by the way, admit that you have weaknesses, because that's the, I know a lot of congregational leaders think they've got to be this, like, Herculean figure that you. People need to know that you're a human too. Like, don't let folks put you on a pedestal that you think you can't fail. They think you can't fail, whatever, because I guarantee you're going to fail then.
Right.
And it's going to be public. It's going to be horrible. People need to understand you're human just like they are.
It might be at the hot tub, so you got to watch out.
At the Rosen Plaza.
Lord.
So, but seriously, take advantage of resources like StrengthsFinders. Put your team through it so you can determine who can do what best and how to facilitate a cohesive structure in your community for that longevity purpose.
And one last thing I want to throw out there is that along with knowing what your strengths are, find people who have strengths in those areas and put them in place. Because sometimes when we have a weakness in an area, we end up putting someone just as weak in that place because we don't want to do it, so we'll put someone else there. And that'll also keep from having those voids or those places where the draft is, where the vacuum becomes, because things don't get dropped, they don't get missed, they don't get left off, they get taken care of. And so it's really important to find the right people to put in those places and to allow them to stumble and pick back up and get going again. Just because somebody dropped the ball one time doesn't mean you don't use them again or they aren't called to do something. We see all kinds of examples in the scripture. Peter is a great example of someone who failed miserably, and then God used him in fantastic and amazing ways. So part of that fill in the void is allowing someone to grow in that position and in that place, and to be there with them and to understand those things. So it's really important as we talk about this that every congregation is going to have voids, it's going to have vacuums at times, but the damage that's done because we don't prepare to deal with those things. You know, in an airplane, when that wall came out, that door opened up, there's a whole plan for what to do in case that happens that's in place before it happens.
And it happens immediately when things go
wrong.
And
it goes into place immediately.
That everybody hopes they never have to use.
Right.
But it's like when you go on a cruise. Like, we'll be on a cruise in a few weeks. You go on a cruise, doesn't matter how many times you've been on a cruise, the very first day that you're on the boat, within usually like an hour before it sails, everybody has to go to a muster station. They got to run you through the whole rundown of the evacuation plan. And in the case of fire, this and this is where everybody, it doesn't matter if you've gone on 1,000 cruises or it's your very first cruise, everybody has to go through and understand the, now, you know, six drinks later, you probably forgot it anyways, but still, no.
They have a plan.
But the reality is that's a great example. Every congregation should have a muster drill plan for every position, for every event that they can think of, and practice, kind of talk about it, go through it, deal with it, so that if, God forbid, something happens, if somebody gets sick, if somebody's in a car accident, if somebody has a baby, which is a wonderful thing, that you're not scrambling trying to figure out what are we going to do. but you have it in place to take care of it. So it's not just succession plan, which is just a small part of this discussion.
Sure.
But it's understanding that as congregations grow, you're going to have people that have kids. You're both, and nowadays, both the husband and the wife take time with the kids, which is a good thing. And I'm not saying that in a negative way.
Right.
But they may have to be out for 4 weeks, 6 weeks, taking care of the baby, doing those things. And somebody may get a job promotion, and suddenly they can't be in the position they were in. So there's good reasons that these vacuums get formed. But if we're doing our job the right way, then we'll have a plan in place for when that vacuum happens, that we're immediately dealing with it. So the least amount of damage to our congregation, right, the least amount of damage to, because it doesn't just affect our congregation, it affects our testimony, and it can destroy things in the process. That's really something we need to learn to avoid.
And with that said, we appreciate you joining us for this episode. We pray that it was a blessing to you, and we look forward to chatting with you, or I guess more accurately, at you again next week.
Thank you for listening to the Messy Antics Podcast. Make sure to subscribe so you can be notified every time we drop a new episode. And be sure to follow and interact with us on social media at Messy Antics Podcast.